for that introduction. So these are my disclosures. And before I start giving a prep overview of Australasia, I just want to make a little bit of a disclaimer. When I started making this talk, I had the thought that I could present pretty much all the research that's been done on PrEP in Australia in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And once you start going there, it's enormous. The way this field has exploded, as you'll see at this conference, it is absolutely enormous. So my apologies if I don't mention your research. It's important, and I would really encourage everybody to go to the 11 o'clock session tomorrow, where a lot of new stuff that I won't cover will be presented. So having said that, what I do want to talk about, I want to briefly review the past, because I think it's important to understand how we got to where we are in talking about the next steps. And then talk about the demonstration and implementation projects, and then early PrEP rollout data, and finish off with what I think are a few challenges in our immediate future and in the next 5 years. So, to start with the past. I think when you think of the way PrEP began in gay and bisexual men, and it is predominantly used in that population in Australia, it was quite a peculiar way that the evidence presented itself to us, because it started nearly a decade ago now in 2010. And back then, we initially thought that this was something that was likely to be 44% effective. And that, while that was wonderful news at the time, because there was almost no effective HIV prevention at that time, apart from behavioural condom-based methods, it didn't lead to an easily implementable response or action. So to compound that, a couple of years later in 2012, there was a sub-study done with that IPREX, and it was a non-randomised sub-study, so it wasn't a comparison between randomised arms. And because that's important, because researchers thinking about those data knock it down a few rungs. They think that's not a randomised comparison. We're not too sure whether how completely we can believe this evidence, which were pretty startling. And essentially, they emphasised the fact that there was a lot of non-adherence in the IPREX study in South America, largely in South American gay men, and that if you looked for blood levels in the drug, which were consistent with dosing at least 4 times per week, you could surmise, based on a case control comparison, that PrEP may be 96% effective. And that was a bit of a game changer. We went from an understanding of partial efficacy to something that could be, in a non-randomised comparison, completely effective. So that result led to the initial IPREX result led to the licensing of PrEP in the US, but nowhere else in the world. It was really in 2015, with the release of studies based in the UK and France and Canada, Proud and Ipagay, which showed that PrEP was 86% effective in France and the UK. And in fact, in those two studies, infections only occurred in people who were not adherent to PrEP at the time of infection. And so that really solidified our understanding that it was a very, very effective intervention. And the French study, the Ipagay study, which is a placebo-controlled study of intermittent PrEP versus placebo, suggested very strongly that it could also be used with a 2-pill loading dose followed by a pill the next day and a pill after that. And then this was all put together, in this case by an advocacy organisation, AVAC, in 2016. And this study shows all of the PrEP studies now, not just in gay and bisexual men, and showed that the two studies that I just mentioned, Proud and Ipagay, were outliers for high efficacy and high adherence, and that's IPREX in the middle. And there was this very linear association with efficacy with adherence. So it became very clear that the poor adherence efficacy shown in some studies was due to poor adherence. So then by early 2016, it was very, very clear. You could summarise this field by saying that oral combined PrEP was extremely effective in people who were adherent. It works best in the rectum, better than in the vagina. In the vagina, it was very clear that daily adherence was required, but for rectal protection, you could miss up to 3 pills a week. And that it was in that setting, men taking daily PrEP, it was close to 100% effective, with case reports of failure in adherent people very rare. And so if we map this against the strategies that we had over that period of time, it won't surprise that in 2012, when the New South Wales 2012-2015 strategy was written, it was the first strategy to contain mention of PrEP, but it was very, very cautious, saying that clinical trials were only very recent, that it might have a potential for a small number of people at very high risk of infection, and that New South Wales Health would consider the application during the period of that strategy. So not terribly encouraging of broad-scale PrEP use. Really, it was Proud and Ipagay, which then led to these WHO recommendations, which were published in November 2015, which were made for a very clear recommendation that oral PrEP should be offered as an additional prevention choice for anybody at substantial risk of HIV as part of a combination prevention response, and made that recommendation as a strong recommendation based on high-quality evidence. So it was really around then that the situation changed. And in New South Wales, the other thing that helped push the agenda was that by 2015, we had the UNAIDS 90-90-90 goals were met just after that in 2016, but we were very close in 2015, and HIV diagnoses were stable. They weren't budging, and it really said that we needed something else to really affect this, and it was PrEP that was part of that. And that was guided partially, how we implemented that in New South Wales was guided partially by evidence from mathematical modelling, which said if you wanted to roll out PrEP not just for the people who are taking PrEP, but to impact your epidemic, then you would want to target it at people at high risk, you would want to get high levels of coverage, and you would want to do it very quickly, and that having lower levels of rollout would not have anything like the level of population level efficacy. And the graph that you can see up there is the modelled efficacy in the blue line of 90% coverage of the high-risk individuals. And when you get to high levels like that, you get a lot of herd protection as well as individual protection of the people who are taking PrEP. And so the new HIV strategy in 2016 was very, very encouraging of PrEP use, calling PrEP the next critical addition to HIV prevention, and that it would be expanded to people at high risk in the context of existing strategies. And so under the What We Will Do there, you hear talk of robust and sustainable systems to expand the use of PrEP to everybody who had a high risk, in line with current evidence, and the guidelines that we had in New South Wales at the time were state guidelines, which predated the ASHRM guidelines. And then the National HIV Strategy in 2018 has gone one step further and has announced formal targets for PrEP use. So really building upon that New South Wales strategy, calling expansion of PrEP a key area for action, and stating that by the end of 2022, we should have 75% of people who are eligible for PrEP taking it nationally. It's also worth pointing out that under that key area for action, the word equitable is highlighted. Even by 2018, it had become apparent that equitable access would be a very, very major challenge. So in terms of the numbers then, we started in 2014, starting in Victoria with VicPrep, and soon after New South Wales with Prelude and the QPrep demonstration project. By 2015, we had about 500 people in Australia on those three projects taking PrEP. The implementation projects then followed very quickly after the publication of Ipagay and Proud and the WHO guidelines. Epic New South Wales starting recruitment in March of 2016. Can attest to that being an incredibly busy summer with no holidays taken, getting that study ready to go. PrEPEX very soon after that, and QPrep not long after that. And by 2018, with the extension of those studies to every state and territory in Australia, with the exception of the Northern Territory, we had 18,500 people on PrEP, so a very rapid rollout there before PrEP was listed on the PBS in April the 1st, 2018. And by 2019, we now believe we have more than 20,000 people on PrEP in Australia. New Zealand has had a somewhat compressed timeline, and Joe Rich from the New Zealand AIDS Foundation sent me this slide in that PrEP was included in the New Zealand AIDS Foundation strategic plan in 2016, quite soon after the WHO recommendations. PrEP was approved and a demonstration project begun in 2017, New Zealand beat us by 1 month to the public funding of PrEP in 2018, so well done, New Zealand. So that's the past, and I just want to talk now a little bit about what we really learnt from those projects that was key to the way we're currently implementing PrEP. And the first thing, which it doesn't seem like rocket science now, but at the time it was critically important. When VicPrep and Prelude in New South Wales started, it was in this era where we were greatly troubled by non-adherence in gay men from the IPREC study and from some other studies. So it was critically important that these studies study adherence in detail. And those numbers are a little small for you to see there, but I'll just say that self-report for PrEP use in this study was very, very high, and that 95% of those in a sub-study which looked at dried blood spot levels of active drug had active drug in their system. The Prelude study in New South Wales went a step further by looking both in plasma and PBMC, which enables you to document recent levels of drug use, and showed extremely high levels of drugs consistent with protective efficacy. When you think of protective efficacy, means you've got levels consistent with taking more than four pills a week, you can see in those graphs it's 90 to 95% of people. And that was consistent with self-report as well, although you will see at month 12 there with the self-report in online survey, the beginnings of what we are seeing now, that PrEP use does decline with time. After many months. Another thing that these studies found was that there was increasing condomless intercourse, and these are data from the Prelude study on condomless anal intercourse with casual partners, the proportion of men reporting that, and you can see a clear month-by-month increase. But despite those increases in condomless intercourse, it saw zero new infections, and the same was seen in the VicPrep study, which saw no new infections in men taking PrEP. It did have a couple of baseline infections, which happened very close to PrEP commencement. So I think it's time we stop talking about this as risk compensation, because it would only be risk compensation if the risk of HIV increased. And the risk of HIV does not increase, because these men are completely covered by HIV. So there is increasing condomless anal intercourse, it would appear, but because there is no risk of HIV infection, as long as you're taking PrEP, I don't think it should be called risk compensation. Aspect of these studies that was demonstrated was that demand could potentially be high. And I say potentially because I'm not going to show you the slide upon slide upon slide that I should probably show you now of the community education and community mobilisation programs, not just social marketing campaigns, but meetings in pubs and clubs and community discussions that were had. This high demand didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of an extraordinary amount of work around the nation, not just in New South Wales, by community-based organisations to build demand. So EPIC, our initial protocol target, we estimated that if we targeted the highest of the high risk, we might need to target 3,700 men. We got there in 8 months. We thought we might reach it in 12. And the state government at that stage made a very far-sighted decision to open the study up to anybody who was high risk. And then by the end of the study, we had over 9,500 men dispense PrEP. These are the data from Queensland. While the numbers aren't as high, they're still showing rapid upticks from the start of recruitment in November 2016 to about 1,700 people on PrEP by June 2017. And the other critical thing we've shown, and I think this is one area where it could be said that we're perhaps leading the world, is that we've demonstrated rapid declines in HIV after implementation. So after the implementation of EPIC New South Wales, we saw a 44% 6% decline in recent HIV infections. The decline was greater for the recent HIV infections than for all diagnoses. We've recently updated those data to the end of the study. We've now seen 30 new infections over almost 20,000 person years, and that observed incidence of 1.5 per 1,000 years compares to an expected incidence of greater than 20 per 100,000 per 1,000 person years, in other words, 2% per year. So we would have expected more than 400 infections had we had no protection from PrEP, and we've seen 30. And I'll come back to those 30 cases in a minute. Another thing we saw was that the reductions are biggest in the inner city, biggest in the gay suburbs. So we've seen 65% declines in those suburbs, the central Darlinghurst, Surrey Hills, Newtown sort of suburbs where more than 20% of the population is gay, but similarly large declines in other gay suburbs, but a much lower decline, about 20% in the rest of the state, the rest of Sydney, where fewer than 5% of men are gay. And you can also look at that inside the cohort, and you can see that the incidence is slightly higher at about 2 per 1,000 person years in men recruited from suburbs with less than 5%, suggesting that they must be having some problems with adherence. The other issue that's leading to the non-impact is that we're not recruiting enough men from those suburbs. As you've probably heard elsewhere in this conference, the reductions were much greater for men with MSM born in Australia, 65% declines. When you look, however, at men in the study, there's no significant difference between men by country of birth. So this is suggesting very strongly that once foreign-born, overseas-born gay and bisexual men are on PrEP, they can adhere just as well as Australian-born gay men. It's a lack of recruitment and enrolment of men onto PrEP that's leading to, well, that's one of the factors underlying the lack of declining incidence rates in those populations. As I mentioned, we do have 30 seroconverters on the study, none of whom were adherent to daily PrEP at the time of infection. Many of these people had only picked up PrEP once or twice, and most had stopped PrEP many months or up to 2 years beforehand. The reasons for stopping PrEP were highly varied, extremely highly varied. Sometimes it was about risk changing, such as a relationship that had ended, or we did get a couple of reports from people who told us they wanted to calm down. They stopped taking PrEP and they became infected, which is obviously not a good outcome. Mental health issues were apparent. We had one person who went to prison and became infected after he was discharged from prison, and a few cases of toxicity, but only a few. And one drug-resistant mutation, which was likely acquired in a person who continued PrEP while he was infected. He'd stopped PrEP, became infected, and then went back onto PrEP without a negative test. So a little bit of speculation in my final few minutes about the future, and I'm going to start off with what I think are key issues for the immediate future and then talk a little bit about the longer term future. So I think this is our biggest challenge at the moment. It's increasing PrEP coverage. I don't think we've rolled out PrEP enough yet. We do have a national strategy which says we should be aiming to target 75% of those who are eligible for PrEP. The periodic surveys allow tracking of the proportion of those eligible taking PrEP, and there is some debate going on still in this sector about the best way to measure eligibility. These data are based on men who report condomless anal sex with casual partners, the proportion of those men who are taking PrEP. So you can see in Gay Sydney there, it's over 70% closing on their national targets. In the rest of Sydney, it's around about 50%, and it's higher in men with who are more educated compared to men who are less educated. So while we are close to reaching that in parts of Australia, and it's probably quite similar to the Sydney figures in inner Melbourne, achieving equity in coverage is the huge challenge at the moment by country of birth, and there we have issues not only of speaking the right language and connecting with people, we have the structural issues of having people have access to affordable medication and affordable healthcare. We have issues of non-gay community attached men. We believe that quite a few of the new infections are happening in men who are not gay identified, who are not gay community attached, and some evidence of increasing risk in young men, or not so much increasing risk, but risk that is not covered by PrEP in young men. And I think we do need to come to agreement on as the best way of measuring coverage. The Gay Community Periodic Survey is clearly a critical part of that. Our next challenge, which is absolutely with us now, and we'll be hearing more about today, is event-driven or on-demand PrEP, or the World Health Organization have called it 2+1+1 for the two-pill loading dose, 2 to 24 hours before sex, a pill the next day and a pill after that. So these guidelines came out only a couple of months ago at the Mexico conference and are a real step forward. The WHO has been quite activist in this field. It was activist in 2015 and got the world moving, and I think it's doing the same again now. So essentially, the data have become much clearer in the last couple of years with large open-label follow-up studies and population impact studies of intermittent PrEP in France, Belgium and the Netherlands, that event-driven PrEP appears to be safe and highly effective. And so the WHO has concluded it can now be offered as an alternative to daily dosing for men who have sex with men. They made the pointed observation or recommendation that countries with existing PrEP guidelines, but where event-driven PrEP is not recommended, can consider including the option of event-driven PrEP for men who have sex with men. And we'll be hearing more about that, I think, from Vincent later. And in terms of will men want non-daily PrEP? Well, I think the evidence suggests, the Australian evidence suggests they really will. There's been at least two studies, probably more, that have looked at this. So Stephanie Vacher reported on men enrolled in the Prelude study that 36% would prefer a non-daily regimen if they were of equal effectiveness. And now some of them wanted periods on PrEP and periods off, but 20% wanted event-driven. Vincent Cornelisi has just recently published a survey of 970 former PrEPEx participants, and nearly half of those who responded said they were interested in participating in an on-demand PrEP study. And these men were more likely to be those who had stopped taking PrEP previously, having difficulty with adherence, infrequent sex, or concerned about toxicity. So moving into the longer term future now is some things that are really going to shake up the field, and it's not that far away, actually. So cabotegravir is injectable PrEP. It's one injection in each buttock, 8 weekly apart. It's perhaps a little bit much for most people. They may not want that series of regular injections, but it'll be an important first-in-class study. There are two randomised trials in the field now, HP10083 looking at men who have sex with men, and HP10084 looking at heterosexual women in Africa. And those trial results are expected by 2022. They could happen earlier because the Data Safety and Monitoring Board meet twice a year. So we should be prepared for injectable PrEP in the next few years if it's shown to be equally effective to daily PrEP. And then looking a little further in the future is the concept of implants. And Merck are working on this compound called islatravir, which is a nucleoside reverse transcriptase translocation inhibitor, very long half-life, and has the potential for an implant inserted perhaps once a year using Merck's existing contraceptive technology. So this will be a wonderful development for PrEP in heterosexuals, in which you might be able to combine contraception PrEP in the single rod. The phase one studies are very encouraging that you might be able to give this once a year. The phase two studies are starting very soon, and so it will be at least 5 years before we get evidence on the efficacy of this. But just to sum up with at the end, in terms of implications for HIV elimination, we do work in a context where we have health strategies which say we're aiming for HIV elimination, and if we are doing that, then we really do need to increase our PrEP coverage. We're doing pretty well and we're heading in the right direction, but equity is the real challenge now. I think based on what's been happening in the EPIC study, but also other studies around the world, including, in fact, an analysis presented by Kathleen Ryan in Mexico of the PrEPEX study, that we really need to address stopping and restarting PrEP, that many men become infected after they stop PrEP when they really should have restarted again. We need to make it easier for men to stop and restart. Now, the WHO has proposed in its event-driven guidelines that you could tell all gay men, whether they're taking daily or event-driven PrEP, to start with two pills. Now, if it's event-driven, in that situation, in 2 hours, you're going to be protected. So it gives you great peace of mind that you'll be protected very soon. And according to the WHO, we can now say that you only need to take drugs for 2 days after your last risk episode and you will be protected for that act. And long-acting forms are going to be very helpful there. Any discussion in this field needs to address the policy and structural issues. We absolutely need improved PrEP access for overseas-born people, and that's a range of people, recent migrants, students, visitors. It's not just people who are here for a long time. And increasingly, as we watch the way the Australian epidemic is going, we're not going to get elimination in Australia unless we can control, unless there is far better control of HIV epidemics in key affected population through Southeast Asia. So we should get involved in that, not only because it's a good thing and it's great to help our neighbours, but for self-interest. To really work at improving our chances of HIV elimination in Australia. I'd like to end with thanking all my co-investigators on the EPIC New South Wales study and all the EPIC New South Wales participants and sponsors, but also to all of the PrEP researchers in Australia and New Zealand whose data I've stolen for various slides today. Thanks very much.